The third case on today's call is number 03-4268, Jet Incorporated against the Shell Oil Company. This case will be submitted to the court on briefs. There will be no oral argument today. We will therefore move to the next case of the morning, number 03-4222, the United States against Gary T. Whitlow. Mr. Cavanaugh.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Phil Cavanaugh. I'm an assistant federal public defender in East St. Louis. I was appointed by the trial court at the conclusion of the sentencing in this matter. May it please the court. The appellant presents two issues for review by this court. The first issue is whether or not the trial court erred, committed plain error in submitting counts 7, 8, 9, and 10 to the jury for determination by verdict. The other issue is whether or not the trial court erred in the admission of highly prejudicial 404B evidence. I suggest to the court that as a practical matter, although these present two separate and distinct legal issues, they interact in such a way as to deny my client a fair trial at the district court level. The key issue in this case is what was the characteristics of the firearms in question, which were two AR-15 and two 30-caliber machine guns. What was their characteristics at the time these weapons were involved and taken from my client's storage locker, or his wife's locker, rather, on May the 17th of 2001. These firearms were not recovered. One was recovered within a month. Several others weren't recovered for 6 or 7 months. All were recovered from the custody or the possession and control of convicted felons. Trial counsel made the point in arguing this matter at the time of the close of the government's case, suggesting that the amount of time that was involved in these weapons being outside even the constructive possession of my client made an ample opportunity for these weapons to be altered by these third parties who were very conversant with firearms. In fact, one of them committed an armed bank robbery. The evidence concerning this is very clear that these individuals knew what they had when they had it. One of the individuals took one of these weapons to a firearms dealer and was asking for certain parts to make the weapon entirely functional. The convicted bank robber even used technical language in describing the weapons, so that would indicate to this court that these individuals had the capacity and the understanding of how to modify these weapons and take them from their original character of semi-automatic and place them in an automatic mode, which is the illegal form that my client was charged with. The other issue is the 404B evidence, where the government indicated to the trial court that they wanted to have evidence from a David Stouffer, who was a former associate of my client, regarding Mr. Whitlow's knowledge of firearms and machine guns circa 1996 and 1997. Now, the problem with this is that it's highly prejudicial because the law requires the offender to have two things: to have possession of the firearm and to have knowledge of its characteristics as an automatic weapon. Stouffer's testimony, the 404B testimony, went much further than this. They talked about how they were buddies together, that they hung out together, that they talked about their military experiences together, they talked about shooting weapons together, they talked about the potential for conversion of weapons. The law does not require this proof, and this proof is prejudicial in the context of this case. The law only requires that the possessor, the charged offender, have the specific knowledge at the time he possesses the weapons that these weapons are in fact capable of firing in an automatic mode. Now, according to Mr. Stouffer, this is a curious commentary on how this matter unfolded, because if the court will look at page 145 of the trial transcript, the third day's trial transcript, Stouffer says that he bought a gun at a gun store. It was a 30 caliber 1919 Browning machine gun, just like the firearms that are identified in counts 9 and 10. Stouffer is a knowledgeable gun dealer, has handled these firearms before. He doesn't know he's got an automatic weapon until he takes it out to the range and shoots it. Now, if that can be allowed for Mr. Stouffer, the government star witness, then I would suggest that the same latitude should have been allowed for Mr. Whitlow, the appellant. In this case, there's only one of two ways to tell if these weapons are fully automatic capable. That's either by field stripping the weapons themselves and seeing if they have the added components that makes them illegal firearms, or taking the firearms out to the range and shooting them to see if they function in a fully automatic mode. There's no evidence that Mr. Whitlow knew of their capabilities when they were stolen or had taken them to the range and shot them himself. That reverts back to the problems of proof regarding counts 7, 8, 9, and 10. Absent the 404B evidence and the discussions of the Mr. Stouffer, the witness, that jury could have not had any inference that Mr. Whitlow possessed these weapons in a fully automatic mode. There was simply no evidence of it. The only evidence was that at one point in time, these weapons were located in his wife's storage locker, and then at another point of time, they were recovered from convicted felons and bank robbers, and they turned out at that point in time to be fully automatic. So for those reasons, I would ask the court to reverse the convictions on counts 7, 8, 9, and 10 and remand them for a new trial.
Could I ask just one clarification? As I understand it, as far as 1 through 6, did he plead on those?
No, he's convicted by the jury.
Okay, and for 1 through 10, he was sentenced to 51 months to run each, to run concurrently?
Yes, Your Honor.
So he's going to have the same sentence no matter what, I guess.
Well, Your Honor, that may affect his rights in terms of the guideline sentence, the fine imposed, and special assessment. I conferred with Mr. Whitlow, and I conferred with Mr. Walker, the trial counsel in the matter, several times over the issues on appeal, and this is what collectively we came up with.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Cavanaugh. We'll hear now from Ms. Garrison.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Honestly, I don't have much to add, really, beyond the briefs. I think what Mr. Cavanaugh is saying is that the government did not exclude every hypothesis of innocence. In fact, we didn't. The convictions on counts 7 through 10 were largely based on circumstantial evidence, and there's nothing erroneous about that. That's quite permissible. The guns charged in counts 1 through 6 all had something in common, and that was their recovery during the interrupted burglary. The other weapons were recovered in a series of unrelated incidents, and when recovered, they all are weapons that fired in fully automatic mode. Did we present evidence that the defendant converted the guns charged in counts 7 through 10? We did not. But there was certainly sufficient evidence in the record from which the jury could have concluded that these guns were fully automatic machine guns at the time the defendant last possessed them, that being on May 17th of 2001. The 404B evidence in this case, Your Honors, we have a concession here that this information was relevant to the issues to be decided by the jury. The only attack on the 404B evidence is that it's cumulative or that it is prejudicial. And we have cited in the brief authorities for the proposition that to be prejudicial, evidence really has to be of the type that would lead the jury to decide an issue based on something other than the evidence in the case. In other words, something that would inflame the jury. This evidence is not by any means evidence of that nature. As for the potential effect on any sentencing range in this case, the sentencing guidelines, the base offense level is determined based upon the number of machine guns possessed. As I recall, the offense level jumps once at least 7 have been possessed. So I think there is an argument here from the defense's standpoint that acquittal on count 7 through 10 would have had an effect on the base offense level. And if the court doesn't have any questions, Your Honors, I would simply rest on the government's brief.
Thank you, Ms. Garrison. Mr. Kavanaugh has 3 minutes. Thank you.
Your Honors, I'm not going to reiterate what I've said before, but the crucial issue is how this 404B evidence came in and obviously prejudiced the jury's determination regarding the verdicts. The 404B witness testified about how he and Mr. Whitlow in 1996 or 97 converted AR-15s to the automatic mode. He also testified about his knowledge and allegedly Mr. Whitlow's knowledge of how to convert 30 caliber Browning machine guns. Those just happen to be the same weapons that are concerned. 7 and 8 are AR-15s, 9 and 10 are 30 caliber machine guns. I think, and given the fact that Whitlow was found not guilty on count 11, I think the prejudice there is clear. I recognize that the jury was properly instructed by the trial court, but I once again emphasize that this isn't a coincidence. There's a logic to this. When Mr. Whitlow testifies about two characteristic firearms, and they just happen to be the characteristic firearms in question, I think that's a little too close for comfort in terms of the prejudice involved in the admission of the evidence. Now, other than that, I don't have any further rebuttal argument. If the court has any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Are you comfortable with that statement about when the guidelines jump up, what number of firearms have to be possessed?
It's my understanding that if Whitlow was acquitted on one count, and if there was reversal on 7, 8, 9, and 10, it would impact the guideline sentencing range. I know it would impact the special assessment that was imposed.
A couple hundred. You're not worried about that.
Well, it's an issue that I felt I should discuss with the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.